You want to hear what the best intro is for this video?
What?
I'm using Clip Studio Paint to draw, and James is using paint to sigh. I don't want to see any comments. Like, okay. So hello, everyone, again.
Hey, we're back.
James is here from The Odd Ones Out, if you didn't know him.
And I'm The Odd Ones Out.
And I'm Jaden.
Obviously.
This is stupid. This time, we're going to be doing Pokemon drawings, but we're going to do Pokemon fusions.
Ooh.
Yeah. So, James, you haven't drawn any Pokemon fusions before.
You're right. I am severely out-practiced.
I have dabbled a bit, but it's been a long time, so I don't know how this is going to go. What we did was we each chose one Pokemon for each round, and we have to fuse our two Pokemon for that round. So, my Pokemon that I chose for this round is Weavile.
Okay, good. So the one I chose is Cubone. So
this is gonna be interesting.
You have to draw the skull of that Pokemon.
I mean, I don't have to.
I mean, whatever.
Have you been playing Pokemon Moon or Sun?
Sun. Yeah, I've played it for about 2 hours, and I have not picked it up since. Does this Pokemon have an evolution?
Weavile?
Yeah.
He is the evolution.
Oh, he is? Because I was thinking he should be wearing a skull of its parents, but whatever, I guess. So this is a bit off topic from Pokemon, but have you heard about this guy named Donald Trump?
I think I have.
In the 90s, he made a board game. So there's
Did
a
he?
Board game about Donald Trump. Yes. It's like Monopoly, but Donald Trump.
So you can like buy the Trump Towers.
I don't know, but as soon as I saw it, I bought it.
I just went
on Amazon and I bought it. Yes. And I bought the most expensive shipping.
Wow. You're excited about this.
I know. I've not started off strong this round, to be honest.
The thing on Weavile's head kind of makes him look like a pharaoh. If King Tut had a Pokemon, he'd probably choose Weavile.
I'm trying to get it so it's obvious that this is a skeleton, not some weird alien. Speaking of Egypt, this is your video, so you're going to be the one who has to edit this.
I wonder if we're going to accidentally have our videos be the exact same time like we did last time.
That was totally planned. It totally was planned, remember?
Totally was.
I have a bad feeling that my part thing looks a lot worse than your thing.
I don't think that art is relative to how good it is.
Wise words.
It's just the idea behind it. Do you think hands are, like, one of the hardest things to draw? A lot of people think that.
You know what's funny is my characters don't have fingers or nothing, so he's going to be holding an icicle. Yeah.
Nice.
Because he's an ice guy. I was trying to do his fingers like the Cubone fingers, but they just ended up looking like Lego hands. It looks like he's wearing a scarf, which is fine. He's cold.
What would this name be?
Weebone. They know that's a... It's not a good change.
Let's
change
it. Cubile.
This video just got a lot inappropriate.
All right, are you done?
I'm done.
All right.
Oh, man, we spent 30 minutes doing that?
Oh, no.
Oh, wow, yours is wow.
Aw, yours is cute. You went the more cute route.
Yeah, yours is really good. Crap, it's like really well made. I'm going against a professional.
Okay, so my Pokemon for this round is Sandslash.
Sandslash? Oh, man. Well, have fun fusing this boy up. Umbreon.
I like Sandslash a lot.
Yeah, he's pretty cool.
He's a cool dude. I think these actually fuse really well together.
Are you? Really? Because I was going to say, I have no idea. See, I'm doing like messy sketches, and your sketches are very clean.
I'm a clean sketchier.
Oh, that's not it.
Sketcher.
Clean sketchier.
People always say, like, do you have any art tips?
My advice is to just start.
Just draw whenever you can.
Even just a little doodle.
There's no right way to draw. It's just whatever works for you. So even if you think, like, oh, no one does this, I need to not do it. You don't have to not do it just because no one else is doing it. You shouldn't really compare your art to people because at one point they were at a spot you were in.
Good advice.
Like, oh, I'll never be as good as this person because they draw so well.
I'll never be good as James. Look at this.
You know what'd be cool as well? If people played along with us.
Oh, yeah.
And they tweeted at us their drawings.
Oh, I'm just imagining what Jaden's drawing and how much more professional it looks, I guess.
Don't compare.
We just talked about this. You said that these two fused well together. Crap.
I think so.
not going for cuteness. I'm going for how I think that actually is. Actually, no, I should just go for cuteness. What the heck?
Cuteness points. I need to make sure that I'm more lively when I'm talking, because I just realized
that
I'm
is
totally
true.
Focused.
That is true. I have been, like, in the zone, so I need to be like, yo, Jaden, have you ever heard about Donald Trump?
Let's not get into that. The comment section will be a war zone. My voice is actually really monotone and soft as it is.
I feel like everyone's voice is always just not as exaggerated and excited as we are for videos. Your drawings, this guy, he's like doing something, you know? He's like, woo, what's he doing? But my guy, it's just like, he's standing there. That's what he's doing.
I saw this, I can't remember where I saw it, but a really good thing that I go by is like the coffin rule, where if you drew a box around your character, try and not make it so they're in a coffin.
He has a frisbee in its mouth. Oh yeah, what would its name be? Sanbrion?
Sanbrion. It's like a dog. I'd have him as a pet. Like, go get the mail, Sanbrion.
You like color yours and add little white highlights. I chose Blaziken.
Oh, this is gonna be interesting. I chose Scizor. Shoot. This is gonna be freaking metal. Everyone thinks my favorite Pokemon is Torchic.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not. It's Blaziken. You fake fans. I'm just kidding. My favorites are Blaziken and Walrein. Walrein is great.
So you know how Blaziken has like a V on its head?
I think we're doing the same thing.
The other guy has, Scizor has like a W. Mm-hmm. So I put in three sharp and pointy ones.
Oh, you're so creative.
Yes. If I make it look intentionally derpy, then I'll be like, oh, it's adorable.
You like to go the cute route.
I do. He's angry. I want him to, you know, be doing something, like punching something or, you know, like, yeah.
Scizor's claws kind of look like another creature because it's got, like, the dots on the side.
Oh, yeah.
The guy's like, meh!
Okay, well, now I'm distracted. So then you can, like, add, like, legs and then, like, a tail and, meh! I've given up going for the derpy look.
What look are you going for it now?
Right now, it's, I don't know. Maybe he could have one claw hand and one fire chicken hand.
I wanted to see if I can resize this head.
Are you already in the coloring phase?
No, I'm in the resizing the head phase.
I feel like I just gave Blaziken claw arms. Let's just finish this. I want to be done.
He's really chubby on the legs, though.
Oh, I like the little claw toe, you know, right at the end. That's smart. Mm-hmm. That's good. Dang it.
His name is Reuniclus.
And then the one I chose is
Abomasnow.
You got it.
I thought that the jelly characteristic of him would make for an interesting fusion. I don't know how I'm gonna draw his mouth. He kind of looks like a frog right now. Ugh, this looks strange. I don't know how to approach this one. Oh god.
Aha!
I'm restarting.
Well, I have already started. Good, good, good. I'm proud. I'm good. I'm so far happy with this.
You know what really bothers me?
What?
When people write credit to the original artist.
Yeah!
Like, do you really think that's helping anyone?
And then we encase the whole thing in jelly. That's the thing I've learned, is that sometimes more doesn't always mean it's better.
Yeah, it's very easy to overdo it in art. Part of art is knowing when to be done.
That's true.
Because, I mean, you can always be adding extra stuff.
But then it gets too busy.
Yeah.
What would this one be called?
Abomicless.
Hey, that's good. That's cool.
He's adorable. He's like one of those really angry, but he's like so small. You're like, aw, you can't be angry. You're not a threat to me.
I like the little sideburns on right here on the side that you gave him. Zebstrika.
Ooh, and then mine's Dragalge.
One is a zebra horse and one's a seahorse.
Are we scientists right now?
Yeah. Why must we play God? The seahorse has so much crap on top of it. Okay, I have the idea in my head, and I think I'm going to butcher it. People out here watching this probably think I'm good, and I think I'm... Holy crap, okay, no, I'm bad. There's, like, people drawing fan art who are better than me.
Yeah, it's always like, oh, you're the one that needs all the recognition and
that's
not
true,
me.
Yeah. The thing about doing YouTube videos is that you don't need to be a good artist.
If you're bad, you don't have to brand yourself that you are good.
I don't know if you knew this, but, like, Grade A Underay was a math teacher, and he got fired from that job, and I was going to school to be a math teacher, and I dropped out.
That's two less math teachers in the world.
YouTube has stolen two math teachers.
Are zebras counted as horses?
I think they're like cousins or something.
They see each other at Thanksgiving.
Were you the type of kid who wanted a pony?
No, I wanted dogs.
My twin sister like wanted, said, can we get a pony? And then my mom was always like, where would we put it? And we would like, good point. Last time we did this, I thought I went a little too easy on you. This time though, I think I know who I'm going up against. Yes, I am a coloring master. Hey, we both did the little front hooves sort of thing.
Yeah, yours is like a minotaur.
Yeah, okay, final round?
Final round. I went a bit all out with... oh, God!
I mean, hey, it's final round.
Tyrantrum, and I chose Deoxys.
Ah, holy... what am I going... how do you do this? You know what? I'm going to pull out all my cards. He's going to be derpy. I have given up.
This is turning out to be a joke. This poor thing. Who hurt you?
This is an abomination, to be honest. This doesn't look like either.
I don't know what I think about this round as a final round.
Yeah, this is how we're ending off. Why am I, like, erasing parts of it? I'm like, ah, oh, no, it doesn't look good. It's like, all of it doesn't look good. This is the best legendary dinosaur I've ever seen.
They need to hire us right now. It's getting worse by the minute.
To be honest, I can't even tell what's what anymore.
I don't know about this round. He's so cute. He's like the pre... if he had a pre-evolution.
If the two of them combined had a pre-evolution. I like how we both had the hands. We had the hands as the noodle. Yours is... okay, yours is actually... I can tell what's going on.
It's like a cluster of just throwing things in there.
So, what have we learned?
We have learned that, I don't think we learned anything. What was the one you're proud of?
I think the fourth one.
All right, so now you should go over and watch James's video.
Yeah, if you haven't already done that.
So, right. Yeah, bye.
Bye.
So, I was eating at this restaurant with my best friend, Kate. Wait, Jin, the audio doesn't sound horrible anymore. Oh, I'm glad you noticed. It's because I got a brand new microphone, and it's actually a good quality one, rather than the microphone that I found laying around in my house one day and decided to make an animation. Now you guys can hear what my actual voice sounds like, and it's not... anyway, back to the story. Now, the place that we were eating at is really cool because for kids, instead of having those coloring menu things, you can ask the waiter or waitress if you can get a glob of bread dough to play with. Freaking bread dough. I don't know anyone who would pass up the ability to play with bread dough. So obviously, Kate and I had to get the hookup. But we were both really shy at the time, so we had to choose who was going to be the one who asked the waiter for the dough. And it wouldn't have been as bad, but considering that Kate and I were both above the age where you were considered a child who can play with bread dough and not be judged by adults, both of us didn't want to be the one who asked. I don't even know how, but she ended up convincing me to be the one, and the waiter came back around 5 minutes later to ask if we needed anything. And that's when I panicked and everything went downhill. I needed to say 7 words. We want some bread dough up in here. But for some reason, I couldn't get myself to say it. At first, I couldn't do anything, and I just stared at him, and he kind of gave me this look. And then I opened my mouth, and this is what came out. I've never stuttered that hard in my entire life. And when I realized that, I started laughing at myself, and then it sounded more like this. Kate's mom had to just cut me off and translate to the guy what I was saying, and after a look that tried to hide his judgment of me, he walked away. I was so embarrassed, but we all got a good laugh out of it. And hey, bread dough. Automatically worth it. Let's start off being honest right off the bat. I have no idea what this video is. I just had a random idea in my head. What if I tried to make a video that has literally no point to it? So here we are. Over the course of like a month or two, I started jotting down some of the random things that have crossed my brain and stuff along that line. Not the kind that are philosophical or have a deeper meaning, just the stupid ones. This video might change the way you view me as a person. Whatever, I don't care. Let's get started. I was going through my phone contacts the other week, and I was like, you know what, I want to get rid of the people I don't really need to have in here. Some contact spring cleaning. So I started deleting people I've never talked to, and the further in I got, the more I was thinking, who are these people? Where'd they even come from? Jacob Acorn? I've never met a Jacob Acorn before, the frick? And then there'd be people where I only added their first name. Ashley? Ashley, I'm assuming Newberry? Yeah, delete. I don't talk to her. Ooh, wait, wrong Ashley. Well, I accidentally just permanently erased some other Ashley from my life. Also, that whole process made me realize I have way less friends than I thought I did. Like, I didn't have too many to begin with, but I deleted a lot more people than I thought I would, and my contact list is far smaller than it was before. What if dogs were the humans of the earth? Like, instead of a human society, it was dogs. What would they create? Would they build a government? What would their education system be? Would they create dog hobbies and dog sports? I'm not talking about the typical throwing frisbees and tennis balls. Maybe they'd create a game where they wear face harnesses with a scoop that can hold a ball, and they have to toss the ball into a hole on opposite sides of the court, each hole providing a different amount of points depending on its difficulty. Kind of like soccer or football combined with basketball. And there's teams, so they need to strategize and work together to win against the other dogs. Would they create art and music and invent things? Do they have passions that we couldn't think of? Like, if humans were just a wild animal, it would be much harder for us to realize that, say, playing a saxophone was your passion, because, ha, wild animals can't invent saxophones, silly. So you'd never discover that side of yourself. But what if dogs could discover their passions and creative sides like humans? I'd want to go to a dog art museum and see what kind of art they'd make. Aren't you curious? If dogs had the intelligence and creativity of humans, what would they do with it? Could they run Earth better than we are? In a weird way? I'd kinda hope so. In horror movies, why is it always the piano that's the haunted, pretentious, scary instrument? I've seen the scenarios where pianos play themselves, the keys are smashed down to make a really ugly sound, maybe the occasional lid will slam down and kill someone. Is it because people see them as elegant yet ominous at the same time, setting up a good atmosphere? I wanna watch a horror movie where instead of walking into a big empty room with a haunted grand piano in the center, a character walks into a big empty room and sees a ghost playing. Much more engaged in a movie like that. Just saying. Why does nobody talk about half-popped popcorn kernels? They're just as good as the full-popped ones. After you've consumed 97% of your popcorn, you get to the kernels at the bottom, and instead of throwing them all away, you should crunch on the ones that are semi-popped. Heck! If you don't eat the half-popped kernels, you're missing out on some of the best things in life. One time I was at the grocery store getting groceries. Yeah, great script right in there, Jaden. That was poetic. And at the checkout, I could tell the cashier was new at her job. Not like she was doing everything wrong, but you could see she didn't have the fluid motion down of a professional grocery store scanner. Those people have it down like it's an art form. It's beautiful in a strange way. So she was scanning the things, and she got to the cilantro. You probably know this, but you can't just put a barcode sticker on cilantro. I think some stores will wrap a tag around it, but the place I was at just had a serial code that the cashier had to manually punch in. So the girl was flipping through the book that had all the serial codes in it, and she couldn't find the cilantro code. I've never mentally connected so much with a stranger before, because I knew exactly what was going on in her head. She was trying to quickly find the code because she didn't want to feel like she was taking up time by being slow, but in the stress of trying to quickly find the cilantro, her brain was getting frantic, which made her gradually start internally freaking out even more because she felt like she was taking way too much time trying to find the code, repeat cycle getting more and more intense every time, and maybe after a minute of her trying to find the code, she just silently put the cilantro in the bag. She gave me free cilantro out of panic.
That was a good day. Also, did you know there's a website dedicated to hating cilantro? www.ihatecilantro.com. They write haikus. Stressing about a close deadline is kind of relaxing in a sociopathic kind of way. We've all done it. You procrastinated a bunch on a project and are in the phase of crap, because it's due tomorrow and it's already 10:45 p.m. and you've only got like 0% done. But if you think about it, it's kind of nice to see it as, well, I'm totally stressed and panicked out of my mind right now and would rather just self-implode. But this feeling is only gonna last for a few more hours, since the deadline's so close. If you didn't wait until the last minute, it would have been a less intense but drawn-out feeling of dread while working, versus this approach, which even though is 10 times more mentally and emotionally draining and likely very bad for your health, only has to last for like one day, maybe even 12 hours if you really push it. So pick your battles. But don't say I told you which one to choose. I'm not responsible for any crummy projects you haphazardly spit out. That's still you. My parents' house had really big windows in the living room, and sometimes birds would fly into them. Most often hummingbirds. Whenever one did, I would go outside to where it landed, and if it didn't die from slamming headfirst into a window, I would pick it up and help it calm down and recover from being stunned. A lot of people would probably say not to do that because it's a wild bird that can have wild bird diseases. And they're probably right, but imagine if you did that with humans. Some kid is outside running around, they blindly run right into a tree and collapse on the ground. You run over to help them, and when you get to them, you go, sorry, kid, you've got a cold. Can't help you out, buddy. Also, are you envious that I've gotten to hold a hummingbird before? One even fluttered around me when it recovered. I'm a bird master. Like I said in the beginning, I was jotting all these down over a relatively long period of time, so I didn't just write all these in one go. And after looking at the list I made, I realized I wrote half-popped popcorn 2 separate times at different occasions. I guess past Jaden just felt extremely compelled to talk about half-popped popcorn. It is really good, though. Why do kids on the internet feel the need to tell their age so frequently? You see it all the time. I'm 13. I'm 6. I'm 2. Is there a reason they do it? Do they think it's vital information they need to convey? Whenever I see a comment that starts with, I'm 9, and my brain kind of automatically writes off whatever they're about to complain about. I'm not saying people these ages don't say anything valuable to me. I really enjoy seeing, I'm 6 and really liked your video. Because then it feels like that message was written with full child pureness. You know the kind. They're still innocent beings that haven't experienced the cruelness of reality yet. But any other time, it's just a detail that adds nothing else to their statement. One time I got an email that said, I love your vids. I'm 7. So I responded with, thanks. I'm 19. Do they feel like they're obligated to express their age? Do they think they're asserting dominance? Is it an accomplishment to them? More mysteries I have yet to find out. I'm not gonna lie. I won't lie, this is definitely... This video was really fun to make. It was so different and experimental and all over the place. I don't know, I just had so much fun making it. I was thinking about doing a video like this for a while, just like little random topics that aren't enough to make an entire video about on their own. I haven't seen anyone else do this kind of thing before either. I could be wrong. Maybe there's like hundreds of people who already made videos like this before and I'm not being creative at all. If so, then okay, whatever. Again, it was pretty experimental and just, I don't know, I kind of like the chaos and unpredictability of it. If you liked this format, I'd totally be down to make another one sometime. But if you're like, wow, Jaden, this was the suckiest video that ever sucked, then I probably won't make another. That wouldn't be a smart move on my part. Well, I had fun. And that's all that matters. Also, see you at VidCon. Within the Pokemon community, there's a set of self-imposed rules you can add to the games to make them more challenging, called a Pokemon Nuzlocke. You can only catch the first Pokemon you run into per route. If a Pokemon faints, it dies, and you can't use it anymore. And you have to nickname your Pokemon to get more attached to them. That means if you aren't careful, you can technically lose a Pokemon game under those conditions. I've wanted to do a Nuzlocke for the longest time. I've started a couple in the past, but never actually got to finish any because busy. But today's the day that all changes. I decided to make a video on my first full attempt at a Pokemon Ruby Nuzlocke. Let's see how it went. After breaking free from the back of the moving truck my mom stuffed me in and introducing myself to the neighbor Brendan, the kid that I always thought was a monkey said that he heard screaming up ahead. Professor Birch is getting mauled by a level 2 Poochyena, so I let his Torchic out and she scratches the crap out of it. He gifts me Torchic for rescuing him and I name her Teriyaki, my first Pokemon. Walking up the route more, I run into Brendan, who challenges me to a battle, where Teriyaki proceeds to also scratch the crap out of his Mudkip. Good job, Teriyaki, you're 2 for 2. Doing great. Professor Birch gives me 5 Pokeballs, and the Nuzlocke has officially started. I walked back up to catch my first Pokemon and ran into a Zigzagoon. Alright, not the best, but I can work with this. You know, I think we're gonna have a really awesome adventure. Dude! So Teriyaki one-shotted Zigzagoon with a critical hit scratch, but whatever. Contain your murder a little bit, alright, guy? Route 102 is right around the corner, and that's where I was able to catch Corn the Seedot. Look at us, couple of friends, ready to take on the Hoenn region together. After watching the weird kid Wally struggle to catch his first Pokemon, I continued on to Route 104 and found a little Talo in the grass. Aggressive and screams and hungry? Oh yeah, I know your name. In Petalburg Forest, a Team Magma grunt jumps some random professor, so Ari and Teriyaki peck his eyes out. Oh, hello, Shroomish. I'm gonna name you Onion. I make it to Rustboro, and while getting ready to take on Roxanne's gym, Teriyaki kills another Zigzagoon I was about to catch. What's your problem with Zigzagoons, dude? But it turned out alright, because she also ended up evolving. Onion was able to destroy Roxanne with ease, and we got our first gym badge. Exiting the gym, we catch a glance that Team Magma is up to no good again. Something about the scorching earth or something. And this old man exclaims that they stole his Pico. Here's your dog. Also, you're coming with me. The mayor thanks me by turning me into his errand boy, and I arrive in Dewford to give a letter to Steven. Alright, what do we got? Ugh. Okay, chomps. After finding Steven, it was time to take on Brawly, the next gym leader. Ari's a stone-cold killer, and easily earned MVP in that fight. Things were going well, 2 badges in, and the team is looking good. On my way to the next city, I caught a tentacle on the beach. Squidward. And after beating Team Magma and Brendan again in Slateport, it was time again to get ready for the gym battle with Watson. But as I was fighting some trainers, Chomps the Mawile got electrocuted a bit too hard and was killed. Jaden, let's battle. I want to show you how strong I am. Okay. Ari, this is an electric gym. You're not allowed to fight in here, so you can just wait outside. While battling the gym trainers, Onion evolved into Breloom, and together with Teriyaki, they were able to get another victory. Now we were riding high. 3 gym badges in and no main casualties. With our massive confidence, we decided to take on the Windstraight family's challenge of beating all their family members. I had Squidward out front to get him some experience, but we ran into some troubles with Grandma. Oh god, it's gonna do a high jump kick. We can take him out, but I need a clean switch first. So I had to sacrifice Hush Child the Whismur, but honestly, that was the safest move to ensure no one else died. Goodbye, Hush Child. You might be missed. While we were heading to Fall Arbor, fighting some trainers, Ari evolved. Oh, look at my big bird. Oh, look at you. Yeah. We were almost to town, but we had to get through the sooty grass on 113. Oh, jeez. All right, Barf, get in there with the rest of them. I walked into Meteor Falls to see Team Aqua and Team Magma arguing about water and rocks.
Can I go? So get over here, Zubat.
They kept complaining, and I had to go up the volcano they were blocking to fight Maxie, the Team Magma leader. That was a hard fight. Onion and Teriyaki were able to take out his Mightyena and Camerupt, but his Golbat hit hard. I ended up having to switch in Ari and double team up to win the battle. Not the most honorable of strategies, but it worked and we're moving on. On the way down the volcano, I ran into a matchup. Oh, hello there, Chad. What? You're a female? Did I stutter? We arrived in Level Ridge Town and started getting through Flannery's gym. During that time, Squidward was almost killed by a Fury swiping Kecleon.
Fury swipes.
Oh my gosh, that does a lot of damage. Stop!
But when it came time to battle, he pulled his weight and more. Honestly, with the team, there wasn't much I could have done to Flannery's fire Pokemon, but Squidward came in clutch by learning Bubble Beam, and it was all over for her. Badge 4, under our belt. Brendan met up with us outside the gym to give us goggles so we could walk in the sandstorms. I found a claw fossil, and Anorith was born. I didn't know what to name it, so my friend named him Gary. Now it was time for the fifth gym. After some training, Chad evolved into Machoke, and the team was leveled up. I started the battle with Ari, and after realizing I was in trouble...
Yeah, that doesn't do a lot of damage.
I managed to squeak by with more double teams. Ari was barely able to take out the first slacking, so when the second, stronger one came out, I knew I had to use a different strategy. I brought out Onion to leech seed it and try and get more chip damage in, which worked, but he was also killed by slacking's facade, which I thought he could take. Chad was able to finish off the rest of the fight, but that was the first death that actually hurt. I'm not crying. Someone's just chopping onions in here. But with every down, there's an up. And Corn stepped up and was ready to fill Onion's spot. While passing through Mauville again, Watson asked us to help him turn off the city's generator. And while down there, I found a Magnemite. You want to come with? Okay. We kept on our way, catching Spurky the Electrike, and while fighting some trainers, Corn survived two very close calls. He took a Swords Dance boosted Fury Cutter by Ninjask, and a misclick from me, which resulted in him tanking a wing attack from a Talo.
No! Corn, no!
Oh! Dude, Corn, I'm so sorry. You're such a trooper. Good news is Squidward evolved while training, so that's neat. We arrived in Fortree City, and this was a gym I was really nervous about. Not only did we not have a good team to take on a flying-type gym, but Winona's Altaria is notorious for sweeping teams if she sets up too many dragon dances. I went to the grass to train up the team,
and the worst happened.
Corn was killed by pin missile from a Zigzagoon.
Wait, no. Stop, Corn!
Corn, no, Corn! You monster, how could you do this? Is this why you kept trying to kill all the Zigzagoons? I want to think that Corn sacrificed himself because he knew we were at too much of a disadvantage going into Winona's gym, and by opening up a space, we could get the type advantage we needed to stand a chance. With a heavy heart, I brought Zip Zap Zop the Magnemite to the team, and realized how much more grinding I was gonna have to do. I had to fight so many Merrills to get Zip Zap Zop on par with the rest of the team. You want to know how many? The move Thunderbolt can be used 15 times before it runs out, and I had to go back to the Pokemon Center almost 6 separate times to refill it, meaning Zip Zap Zop killed more than 80 Merrill that were living in that lake. Winona led with Swellow, which Zip Zap Zop was able to take out, but she immediately brought out Altaria, which made me very scared because I know she's got Earthquake on that thing. I didn't have a clean switch, and I knew no one on the team could take 2 hits from this cloud bird, so I ultimately decided that I'd have to have Zip Zap Zop paralyze it in exchange for his death. Goodbye, Zip Zap Zop. You weren't here for long, but your efforts will not be in vain. Oh my god! Somehow Zip Zap Zop lived the earthquake on 2 HP like a mad lad. Corn must have been looking down on us for that one, because there was definitely a 90% chance Zip Zap Zop was supposed to die there. With that string of luck, I was able to switch Ari in for Zip Zap Zop to predict another earthquake, and started chipping away at the Altaria, which was not gonna be easy. She was already starting to stack up those dragon dances, which make her moves even more powerful, and I was legitimately sweating. But with what little luck we had left, Winona got greedy and tried to get in that last dragon dance, and that's when Ari was able to swoop in and snipe that kill. If that Altaria would have decided to attack at any point, she would have one-shotted anyone and everyone on my team. Thank you, Corn. You shined your photosynthesis onto us. From there, I was able to heal up Zip Zap Zop and sweep the rest of her team. The sixth gym badge was ours.
Outside the safari zone, I found a Duskull I was able to catch. I tried to have Gary on the team since resurrecting him from the dirt, but he honestly has, like, no moves that do damage, so I decided to replace him with Sin. We arrived in Lily Cove, and I tried fishing on the beach for a Pokemon, but Chad punched the Whalmer I reeled up too hard and killed it. We stormed Team Magma's base, and while trying to get the Master Ball they've got on the ground, an Electrode exploded and almost killed Chad, which was uncalled for. After beating their admin, they escaped into a submarine, and I went on to fight the next gym. Tate and Liza were the first double battle gym leaders, and I didn't realize until too late that I was just a tad underleveled for them. They don't have any more than two Pokemon, so I think we should be okay. 42?! Uh-oh. Sin and Zip-Zap-Zop made a good duo, being able to confuse and paralyze them, but Solrock managed to get off a Sunny Day powered flamethrower in Zip-Zap-Zop's face, which totally killed him. That really sucked. He put in so much work for the team and really carried us this far. The rest of this fight's for you, Zip-Zap-Zop. Squidward came out, and together with Sin, we're able to finish off the duo, getting us our 7th gym badge. Alright, Sperky, you're up. I think I single-handedly wiped out the entire water Pokemon population between Zip-Zap-Zop and Sperky. I went to Shoal Cave and caught Blubby the Spheal, and went out to take on Maxie one last time. For some reason, I didn't learn my lesson when being underleveled for Tate and Liza, because I was even more underleveled for Maxie.
My Deanna.
It doesn't go down?!
This fight was rough. Chad was able to take out his Mightyena, but I resorted to Squidward when his Crobat came out, and luck wasn't on my side here, because Squidward was killed by a Hyrule Wing attack. The way Pokemon works is there's a small range of damage an attack can do. It's not actually the same all the time, and it's kinda based on chance. So even though it looked like Squidward could've lived two wing attacks, Maxie was able to get a low roll on the first one, and a high roll on the second. Which was the death of Squidward. But it wasn't time to give up. We had to persevere. For Squidward. Ari came in and took out the Crobat, and lived on 1 HP when hit by Camerupt's Rock Slide. It was a tough battle, but we squeaked by. Barely. After that fight, I needed to take a step back and seriously grind up the team again. If we were just a bit more underleveled, we would have been murdered. Blubby joined the team and we got to work, eventually arriving in Sootopolis. Steven and the Sootopolis gym leader Wallace were there saying Groudon was in the cave because someone used the wrong orb and pissed him off. So I went in there, walked up to Groudon, and Master Balled him immediately. There's no way I'm fighting Groudon. Now get in the box. While fighting Wallace, Sperky was able to take out his Lovedisc and Celio. Sin beat his Whiscash, and Chad finished off the Milotic. The team was perfect. And after obtaining our final gym badge, I knew we were ready for the Elite Four. We got through Victory Road. Wally tried to fight us for the last time, but he just needs to stop. We exited the cave, and there it was. The final challenge. Here we go. Sydney was up first, and honestly, he wasn't a challenge at all. Chad and Teriyaki were able to take care of his team with ease. Phoebe wasn't difficult either, with Sin and Blubby being MVPs. Glaceo was a bit tougher. Teriyaki was able to take out her Glalies, and Sperky could handle her Celios, but her Walrein was the big problem. Walreins are thick, can tank a lot of hits, and can do a lot of damage. I would know. Because I have one. I brought out Chad and she was able to get in a good amount of damage, but she was ultimately killed by Blizzard. Sin came out to try and confuse it, but it broke through the confusion and landed a Sheer Cold. Sheer Cold is a one-hit KO move. It has a 30% chance of hitting the target and will fail if the target Pokemon's level is higher than the user's. But even under all those conditions, it hit. And Sin was killed. Two great team members, down and out. Chad was with us for so long and pulled so much weight, and Sin got us through some really tough battles. Even with those losses, we were able to finish Glacia off and move on to the final Elite Four member, Drake.
Drake's got a tough team, but we've got a Blubby, and she wanted revenge for her fallen comrades. She ice-beamed every single one of Drake's Pokemon. Just a straight-up massacre. And with that, it was on to the last battle. Steven Stone. I was legitimately nervous. I led with Spurky to take out his Skarmory as quick as possible, and Blubby was able to take out his Claydol and Aggron. But then came his Metagross. This might be the end. Metagross is Steven's strongest Pokemon, so I needed to hinder it as much as I could before it started doing serious damage. I knew his Metagross had Earthquake, which would definitely take out most of my team, so I had to have Spurky Kamikaze to get a paralysis off. Blubby came out again, and after a lot of hard work, finally beat the Metagross by spamming Surf. Teriyaki was able to finish his Cradilly, and his final Pokemon was Armaldo, Gary's final revenge for getting booted from the team. I brought out Blubby because Teriyaki was pretty weakened, and after realizing she gets two-shotted by him, I knew she was gonna have to die. So with a heavy heart, Blubby pulled off her last Surf, getting Armaldo in the red, and was killed. Teriyaki, the Pokemon who's been with us from the start, who's seen her friends die in front of her, the OG, refused to let any more murder happen. Onion, Corn, Zip-Zap-Zop, Squidward, Chad, Sin, Spurky, Blubby, their zeros and ones won't go down in vain. One good kick to the head, and we did it. We completed the Pokemon Ruby Nuzlocke. Teriyaki and Ari were the only survivors, but the whole team put in a lot of work to get us to number one. A cheers to the true Mad Lads.
May not have picked up on this yet, but I'm not the most confident, brave, whoa, hey, look at me, I'm totally the best kind of person. I'm shy and nervous and self-conscious and a mess. There's a lot of bigger, important things that I worry about, but I'm just gonna talk about the stupid ones that'll probably make you think I'm just dumb. Gotta keep it upbeat and entertaining. I can't be creating swirling vortexes of existential crisis and self-doubt. Yet, judge me if you want, but I mean, I can't help but be pointlessly freaked out about these things. I'm sure you've got your weird triggers too. Loud flushing toilets. I can't remember a single moment of my life where I haven't been scared of loud flushing toilets. It's just the fact that, especially if you're in a stall, you're locked in this tiny space with this solitary, isolated toilet bowl, and it's always a gamble. Some toilets are really nice and quiet, and they just go... It's the frickin' biggest relief of my day when I think a toilet's gonna pull some ungodly sound out of nowhere, but it turns out to be practically silent. I get overwhelmingly happy. Probably too much to be considered normal anymore. But then there's the ones you flush, and all of a sudden you've just released Satan himself and a thousand tortured souls from the fiery pits of hell. Just... I go into mental breakdown stage. I can't even move. Have you ever seen the videos of like goats or some other animal where they just freeze and fumble over if they get startled? That's me. But I don't fall down. If I'm in a house where there's a bunch of extra room in the bathroom, I get as far away from it as possible. Immediately. But again, if I'm in a stall, I have to end up just pressing myself against the door as much as I can and wait for it to end. Jaden, you bimbo, if you're so terrified, why don't you just leave the stall? Well, good sir, have you ever noticed that bathroom stalls tend to mainly open inwards? That means in order to leave, you gotta step closer to the toilet. No thank you. That's the opposite of what I want. I'd rather just be a frozen victim for 10 seconds. Why do factories even make loud flushing toilets anymore? Just make them all quiet. Please? I'm getting tired of pressing that dumb button, and all of a sudden all the Jurassic Park movies start screeching at me at the same time. Silly already falling into insanity. Speaking of bathrooms, you know those public hand dryer things? The ones where you have to stick your hands in and it blasts air? I can't do those. I have this image in my head where I put my hands in and then some cyborg future handcuffs lock onto my wrists and I get kidnapped by a hand dryer. Like an evil bathroom transformer waiting for its next human victim. Well, too bad, you dumb hand dryer. You can't fool me! And speaking of hands, I am just on a roll with these transitions today. I'm self-conscious of them. No, I'm not just afraid of hands in general. That's chirophobia. I had to look that up. I have this dumb thing where my hands are always cold. Not just like, oh, your hands are a bit cold. They're frigid. It's so bad that I'm actually very nervous about shaking people's hands or giving high fives just because they're so cold. Whenever you meet someone new, you normally shake their hand. Well, I don't want to shake their hand if their first impression of me is going to be, hi, I'm Jaden. Boom, I'm secretly an ice witch, and you've just been cursed with the power of a million ice cubes. How about instead of shaking hands, we just do finger guns. I like that idea much better. Like, we've all been in that situation where you have to say bye to someone, and it's like, well, shoot, am I supposed to shake their hand, or hug them, or whatever other confusing goodbye motion? Just do finger guns. Less confusion. And contact. I'm sure the mysophobes can agree with me on that one. And with high fives, normally it's not that bad, but I still try to minimize it to the least amount of physical contact as I can. Someone goes, high five! And I just smack their hand as fast as possible. It's weird and noticeable sometimes, but trust me, I'm doing you a favor. What else can I be stressed about? Time limits in video games. The less amount of time, the worse it is. I just can't stand the feeling of a constant, you better hurry up and complete your mission, you only have a limited amount of thinking time, every action you do that has no impact on furthering your path is a mistake, you're doing everything wrong and your inevitable punishment is steadily approaching, even in Mario. I mean, it doesn't affect me too much because the timer is up in the corner and not in your face like some games, and there's typically a lot of time, but as soon as that music gets faster, oh boy, everything just got intense. Oh, I'm in trouble now. Time to sprint. No time to look for secrets or nothing. I'm about to have an aneurysm here.
Our lives are a time limit when you think about it.
Back when I was a kid, I had this Game Boy Advance SpongeBob game. And for the second level, you had to get SpongeBob to the top of Sandy's treehouse by hopping up branch platforms. But the thing was, there were bird baths scattered around, and you only had a limited amount of time to get to the next bath before SpongeBob dried out. I was so scared of running out of time, I never got past the level. I stood at the bottom, just sitting in the bath, occasionally stepping out only to get extremely panicked to see the time start ticking down and hop back in. I really want to play that game again. I've gotten better at video games since then, and I kinda want to experience the other 95% of that game.
Okay, so since I have zero self-control when it comes to video games and nostalgia, I went out and I bought the game. I bought the game again because I wanted to play the level and prove to you that I can beat it. So, yeah. I'm just gonna... I have my Game Boy and I'm gonna play the level. Look at this nostalgia, though. I haven't played this in how many years? At least 10. Oh my god. What am I doing? This is one of those games where it didn't even save your progress. You had to enter a password. Oh my god. The pressure's on, actually. Look at this. It only gives you 20 seconds. What the heck? That's pressure at the max. Alright. Oh, look at SpongeBob. And then you get, like, the spatulas. People are gonna say, get the- Hey, it's Ari! Thanks, Ari. Should I become a gaming channel? This is totally gaming channel status. Oh, no! Just kidding. And, alright, see? Dang.
Hot and cold. I don't know what my problem is here. I've just never liked it. If you don't know what I'm talking about, hot and cold is a game where you try to find something based on audio hints other players give you. Cold means you're farther away, hot means you're getting closer. So basically, you're walking around aimlessly while other people are screaming at you. That's how my mind interprets it anyway. I can't cope with the constant input from people based on my every action, and it gets worse when I'm getting closer. With every step, people are getting more and more intense at me, and I feel like something's just gonna pop up out of nowhere and, stab me. You're getting warmer. You're hot. You're steaming. You're on fire. You're in a volcano! Stop! You're freaking me out! I can't handle all this intensity! I just want to run away back to the cold area. It's calm over there. It's Jill. Last one I'll talk about here. Before YouTube, and even since I was a kid, I've always been self-conscious about my voice. But for different reasons. When I was young, somehow I started believing, wow, my voice is really low compared to other girls. People are gonna think I'm a boy. That one didn't make too much sense. I don't know how I came to that conclusion. I don't believe that one anymore. But recently it's been more of, my voice is weird and awkward and mumbly, and I don't like it. I'm really reserved, so I think since I never did much talking, my voice wasn't able to develop as much and get as strong as it could be. It's funny, when I first started making videos, when I had to sit down and record, which back then only took like 15 minutes, which like, I wish it only took 15 minutes to record audio now. But even after those recording sessions, my throat would hurt and end up being really sore because I wasn't used to talking that much for that long. It was kind of pathetic. But now it takes literally 6 hours to get my audio done, so I've come a long way. I've been swaying back and forth between being self-conscious and just being okay with my voice because I still think it's a bit too mumbly and weird. But I've been reading some comments like, oh, Jaden, I really like your voice. Which, I mean, thank you. But I don't really see it. But if you enjoy it, then I'm glad. My vocal cords say thank you. Thank you. There's a bunch of other things I wanted to talk about that I didn't get to mention, like phone calls. I can't really handle phone calls. This day and age, people seem to only call if they need something or along that line. And I just think, what do they need? What are they gonna ask me? What if I don't have an answer? What if I waste their time? I don't know what they want from me. The possibilities are endless. Oh my god! And then I end up not picking up the phone. And just freak myself out. Also, eating food in front of people. I know that one's a bit more common, but I'm really, like, self-aware about that too. I feel like someone's gonna judge me on what I order and how I eat it and other nonsense that practically no one does. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm a freak for being nervous about so many things. Maybe I'm not. I don't really know anymore. Talk to you later. Bye. I'm doing finger guns.
Okay.
So, do we need to do a hello, everyone, and welcome to Jaden's channel?
Okay. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Jaden's channel. We're back with reacting to stuff. It's James here.
Yay!
My parents sent me the full recording of the camp operetta footage of both the shows, and I was like, let's react to it.
Is this the one where the one actor doesn't have an arm?
Yeah, I went through it, but they didn't. So, like, spoiler, I briefly went through it, but they didn't record her, so you have to just trust me on that.
Whoa. Okay, so this is all well-edited clips put together.
Yeah.
You're doing a ritualistic sacrifice.
The teacher said we choreographed all of this by ourselves.
Oh. Okay. Don't mean to sound like a bad friend, but which one are you?
I'm the cheetah, the one with the spots. Not that one, not the giraffe.
Okay. I didn't...
Listen to the sad music.
Wow.
I think she's a warthog.
The drum. So what's this? I still don't know the story of this play. Oh, there you are. Hiding. I heard this singing. Okay.
She's the smallest warthog.
No. Wow. Wait, I'm trying to listen. You're useless. They're the bad guys. There you are.
Like, there I am. What am I gonna do?
Uh huh.
I look really good.
What? Oh wait.
I don't know quite what I said, but my hand gestures are really good. Look at me. I'm still like in the pose.
Wait, this song. London Bridge is falling down. You're singing this to the tune of London Bridge is falling down.
Yeah.
Do you think anyone in this video will watch this reaction video?
I hope not. Because we're kind of just making fun of children. If I didn't know that I was in this, I would have been like, oh, these are all just like kids. I mean, we're also wearing masks too. Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's
so
true.
I think that helps hide identities.
Yeah, but if you saw yourself, I think you'd know.
I don't think I'd know. I saw myself, like, I pulled up the file and was like, which one am I? Am I that one? Oh no, I'm that one. Look at me go.
Yeah, you were a bad guy. You were saying everyone.
I told her she's ugly.
Yeah. How long is this play? Because I've watched it for 15 seconds, and I'm just wondering, when will it end?
What am I doing? What am I doing?
You're the...
Is that... Did they... Wow. Oh, so, like, I think what happened was the gazelle gave the stupid warthog the bongos, and they must be, like, magic. And then, for some reason, it affected us.
How do you not remember the story of this?
It's just repressed, I think.
Wow.
Oh. She fainted. Is she dead?
What are you doing? You're like...
Oh, no, she's fine. She looks really comfortable. Oh, look, all the warthogs have all the spots and stuff now.
Is that the teacher in the corner right there?
Maybe.
Is that a parent?
Looks like it. Oh, this is where we're switching. Now I'm doing music. Look at my face. Oh, now it's just the next one.
Wait, that was SpongeBob.
It's Patrick.
What just happened?
This is the next play.
Okay, I don't know, because the set looks so the same.
No, now we're under the ocean.
Okay, wait, what is this?
So this one is Rainbow Fish.
Oh, I know Rainbow
Fish. Did you read that book?
Was that the
kid?
One with the scales?
Yeah, the one fish has, like, all the rainbow scales, and people are like, I want one. And she was like, no, go away, and everyone hated them.
But then she learned to share.
Spoilers! But yeah, that's the one. What is happening? What?
Wait, go back. There's, wait for it. On the right side, the person's just waving.
Was that supposed to happen?
I'm assuming you've taken creative liberty in this play, because you've added so many characters.
It looks like there was, like, a bunch of paparazzi fish, and the rainbow fish was trying to go to the restaurant, and then they're like, yeah, you know? You know?
Oh. Wow.
Oh, look at me. It's me doing that. That's...
Oh, wow. Well, because you're piano, right?
Yeah, that's the part where they're like, okay, we need someone who plays piano to do this. And then I won because I was the best piano player. And then they put my hard-earned talent to that.
Do you think when your parents were filming this, they were also thinking, what are they saying?
Probably.
Is that the London Bridge is falling down again?
Yeah.
Why is that your go-to melody?
Did you hear that?
Wait, go back.
This is spooky.
Do you think that's a Halloween costume, isn't
that
it?
That is like the costume that we had.
Yeah.
That's a mood right there.
That's a cursed image.
The audio is really bad. There's me.
Oh, I would not have known. Cool.
Look at that. I thought I was really good at singing. Heck yeah.
Wait, that's you.
This is the part where my bracelet got stuck, and I was supposed to put up two hands.
But you kept it cool.
My arm is stuck at this moment. Aww, that's disappointing.
Wait, can we go back? What'd you say?
Got my summer line entitled The Underwater Blues Inspired You. Share and give to others. On with the show.
Yay!
Why do kids talk like that? Just, you see, I was riding my bike and I went and I fell, but then I got up and then I kept going.
And you.
It's like, learn, it's articulate. Like, on with the show.
Look at
this. That girl.
No.
I'm laughing too hard. look at the spin. That one.
No.
Just expose this random child.
Some of us had like the scales upside down too.
You gotta get your costume up, baby. That's pretty cool.
That's pretty cool. That was dope.
I mean, yeah, standing ovation, 10 out of 10. What was
that
happening?
That was really hard to follow.
So you didn't do theater in, like, school ever again?
No. I didn't do it ever before or after.
Wow.
And it was fun. Like, yeah. I liked doing it.
Yeah, I did theater in high school, and I did improv, too. And I had a lot of fun time doing improv.
I remember, like, little spotty memories of this and performing and stuff. And I had the memory, like, man, I was really good. And looking back, it was like, oh, no. I really wasn't. I didn't even know how to say words.
Well.
Yeah, that was, like, pretty impressive, wasn't it?
All right.
That was... So I think the what happened in the first one was there was a tiny warthog. And everyone's like, you're useless. You're ugly. And
Ooh.
Then she got, like, magic bongos.
Like a fairy godmother that
yeah.
gave you, instead of slippers, it was magic bongos.
Yeah, and then it didn't even affect her. It just, like, made the stripes and all the patterns on the animals switch.
Now
everyone's and then
ugly.
Everyone's upset. And I don't know. I don't remember the ending of the thing. My parents didn't record it.
If they did, would we be able to understand it?
Probably not.
Yeah. The moral is that if you're ugly... then make everyone ugly.
The rainbow fish thing, we made it so, like, the rainbow fish was, like, a snobby model, and then everyone's like, oh, paparazzi. And
I thought I saw Ariel in that play. Was that Ariel?
I think so. I don't know what her character was,
Well,
though.
I also saw Patrick, so.
Yeah, just, like, throw in a bunch of characters. And then I had, like, a modeling fashion show, and everyone had a rainbow scale, and everyone was beautiful.
So that's your theater experience.
Yeah, that was great. And then I never did it again. I don't know if I would have done it again. I think I would have, but they didn't have a lot of money, so they couldn't afford it.
Oh, no.
Year. So,
oh, yeah, didn't it get shut down?
Yeah,
didn't you
did.
Mention that? Whoops.
Thanks for watching.
Thanks for showing me that, Jaden.
That, like, car accident. Go watch James's channel.
Me and Jaden played Mario Maker 2 on my second channel.
Is that going at the same time?
I don't know. I don't know when it's coming out.
We could coordinate it.
That's
I think.
Smart.
It'll be a while, though, because I have to upload the Camp Operetta animation first.
Okay, well,
and then...
a while ago, me and Jaden played Super Mario Maker 2. We're trying to plug things. Wear your seatbelt.
I think we all know the gist of what a speedrun is. Play game fast. But there's so much more that goes into it than what's on the surface. People spend hundreds of hours practicing games, finding optimal routes, discovering the most precise glitches that can save from minutes to just a few frames, which if you don't know is basically risking your entire run just for a few milliseconds of time save. I've come to love speedruns, watching them at least. Something about them is really cool to me, and I think the community is really cool. It's all cool. I've been lurking and watching various speedrunners for a decent amount of time, and I decided that I wanted to do a speedrun. Now, I don't really have the time to set aside hundreds of hours to hone my skill on whatever game I want, so I decided I had to do a blind speedrun where I just play it for the first time and try my best. I spent a few days racking my brain on what game I'd like to run. I like Pokemon. Maybe I could run a Pokemon game. But that's a lot of researching and memorizing and luck. I could try a Mario game. It's a popular category, but I don't know if it's for me. Then it hit me. The perfect game. Of course! Why hadn't I thought of it sooner? I ran to speedrun.com to check if anyone has run it yet. No one. None. I'm going to be the first person in the world to speedrun Cooking Mama 2 Dinner with Friends. That I know of. Why did I choose Cooking Mama? Because, dude, Cooking Mama is awesome. If you haven't played, it's a DS game where you follow steps to make food and impress Mama. The better you do, the better score you get. Plus, I'm at an advantage when it comes to preparing food. I've seen Food Wars. I know all the techniques and secrets. If you're under 18, don't look it up. Why did I choose the second game and not the original? That's the one I bought. Duh. I used to play Cooking Mama all the time as a kid with my friend Kate. I always thought Mama's English was really funny.
Good luck. You get me to your best ever.
I still love it. We even had this system where if we kept failing at a recipe, we'd have to change chairs because that one had bad luck. Obviously. I don't have that luxury this time because I have to stay by the computer, so I'll have to come up with a better strategy. Also, extra movements lose time. I need to be efficient here. Anyway, I wanted to have some sort of challenge, so I decided to add some rules to my run. One, I have to fully complete the main game mode, Cook with Mama. Two, I have to receive a gold medal in every single recipe. That means I can't make a mistake. Ever. Can't burn a single onion, can't accidentally pour the rice into the sink, can't smack my hand while pounding mochi. If I do, The whole recipe needs to be redone. 3, that's it. Do it fast, I guess. The first recipe is pizza, and I was off to a pretty good start. Obviously, it's a speed run, so I didn't have time to read the little description on what to do each step. But for the most part, I was able to use my massive IQ and big, strong brain to decode the objectives in split seconds. Except in the last step where I didn't know how to work the oven and failed immediately. Again, off to a great start. After deciphering how the oven worked, I was moving on quickly. Peanut butter, poke the peanuts, done. Oops. Recover, adapt, overcome. Done. Sea bream carpaccio. Exfoliate the fish, chopping, restart. Choose smaller knife, easy peasy. Corn soup. Ew. Balled the corn, boil, strain. Oh, come on! Not all the corn came out. All right. Admittedly, I was making a lot of mistakes at the beginning. I was nervous because it was my first speed run, and I didn't know what I had to do most of the time, and was generally panicking. But then I remembered that no Cooking Mama 2 speedruns exist yet, so that means I'm on world record pace, and that made me feel better. One mechanic I had to learn the hard way was, when it comes to the oven, choose the low heat. The first attempt, I decided to go with the medium heat to go a little bit faster. And look at this! Oh no! What was that? That was a speedrun in itself. Burn the apple pie as quick as possible. You know how there's separate categories in speedruns? Mario Odyssey has the one where you take Mario's shirt off as fast as possible called nipple percent. I want one for Cooking Mama 2 called burn apple pie percent, where you just burn the apple pie as quickly as possible. Anyway, I redid the pie and was moving on. Bonk. Ill rice bowl. We're about an hour in at this point. I had my friends in a Discord call so they can help me take notes so I didn't have to rewatch all the footage again for the script, and they decided to look up how many recipes there actually were in the game. I didn't know because I wanted to go in completely blind. And you know what they discovered? There are a total of 80 recipes in this game. An hour in, I was on recipe 8. Which would be impressive in real life, but not here. So either we were gonna pull a Cooking Mama all-nighter, or I had to start picking up the pace. Sorry, Shrimp, this is gonna get violent. It wasn't perfect, and I was still making some mistakes, but I started getting into the zone. It helped that I was starting to get familiar with the mechanics and actually know what the game wanted me to do for most of the steps now. Waffles, chili dog, meatloaf, lobster. I was one-shotting all of them. I even put 2 mama flags on the lobster, which was a bit risky, but you know me, I live for the danger.
I almost forgot to put the lobster on.
Let me pause and tell you a story of my childhood. I already mentioned my love for Cooking Mama as a kid. Even 12 years ago, I set myself the goal of getting gold in all the recipes. But one haunting memory I have of this game was my struggle against the Mama Rice Cracker. All the steps are relatively simple, but at the end you have to stamp all 18 crackers with a Mama stamp. That's what makes the Mama Rice Cracker the Mama Rice Cracker. But as a kid, my DS was old and I dropped it a few times, which messed up the calibration on my screen in a way I couldn't fix. So that meant at the very end of the recipe, it was extremely hard for me to stamp the stamp in the exact spot that Mama wanted. I spent weeks, I'm not joking, trying to get the gold on the Mama Rice Cracker. It was the last one I needed, and I couldn't do it. I just couldn't. I'm pretty sure I was eventually able to pass, but let's just say I didn't, for the sake of drama. Either way, I was having PTSD. I was going through all the steps, washing the rice, putting the rice in the little hole, mochi pounding the rice scoop, and then it appeared. The screen that caused the most pain a video game could to a 10-year-old. I was slowly making my way down the line. Everything was going well. Then all of a sudden, on the 10th cracker...
No!
I accidentally tapped the screen when I was lining up my pen, causing me to not brand the cracker enough. I'm not one to believe in spiritualism or star signs or Destiny's Child, whatever that stuff is. But that moment in particular made me question if it was all real and my only fate is to eternally fail the last step of the Mama Rice Cracker recipe until I inevitably die in an unaccomplished old man that makes ugly rice crackers. I did it right the next time, but that would have been unfortunate, right? With the Mama Rice Cracker conquered, now nothing was in my way, and I was making my way through the rest of the recipes. At the 2-hour, 37-minute mark, 27 recipes in, Ari got out of his cage and was running around the room, so I had to spend precious time getting him back under control. That was a loss of 2 minutes right there. Then I missliced the ravioli, so I'm blaming all of that misfortune on Ari. I actually struggled a lot on the ravioli recipe. The pasta is really hard to cut because you have to time the splice with the line, but since I was so focused on when to cut, a lot of the time I would deviate from the actual line to cut from and mess up. Then when I was able to get past that stage, for some reason the mic had trouble hearing me blow, so even though I was doing what I was supposed to, I'd fail anyway.
No, do you hear it?
Overall, I had to redo the ravioli recipe 6 times, and I spent 11 minutes on it. Not great. Thanks, Ari. But after that, I was able to one-shot both the cake and the spring rolls. And can we talk about how the ice cream recipe literally just makes you scoop out store-bought ice cream and put sprinkles on it? That's been my favorite recipe so far. Skipping forward a bit, let's talk about the mango pudding. This was ravioli part 2. The first step I had trouble with was memorizing the order of the ingredients. It was a 6-part Simon Says memory game, and my big smooth brain can only handle one number at a time before the concept of object permanence leaves my body. I inevitably got a lucky pattern that was easy to remember, and after a few more steps, in the end I had to draw a line at a specific speed that would remove the pudding cleanly. Too slow and it wouldn't come out, too fast and it just... For the life of me, I couldn't get the pacing right 3 consecutive times in a row. And with the combined difficulty of that, along with the memorizing, I spent another 10 minutes trying to get it right and still failing. My confidence was shattered and I had to take a mental health break. I'll be back for you, mango pudding. I'll come back stronger and I'll cook you so well I'll become the mama. I was in shambles from the pudding, but was able to move on and started getting back into a rhythm. All these foods, I was knocking them out one by one. I will note that I struggled with popcorn because I thought there was going to be some sort of indicator or something on when to open the lid. So I just sat there until I realized I burnt it all.
Oh, wait.
So I was like, oh, okay, I'll open it when I hear the popping sounds. And then I opened it with like 5 popcorns. But it's okay, I was able to figure it out. Overall, the rest of the run went on without any major problems. I was able to finish up the rest of the recipes, and at the 6-hour, 38-minute mark, I only had 2 recipes left. The bento box, and of course, the mango pudding. Time is ticking, we're in the endgame now. Also, my Discord friends were ready to never talk to me again. I thought I could just get the bento box over with quickly, because it's like... You just put food in box, right? Well, actually, I didn't realize I had to include food from all the categories Mama gave me, or something, so I failed it like 3 times and was on the brink of insanity, trying to figure out what Mama wanted from me. The food is in the box, Mama! What's what a bento box is? Food in box! What else do you need? Blood? A blood sacrifice? It didn't say anywhere in the instructions that I should have put more variety in there. Not that I was reading the instructions anyway. I still, right now, don't know what Mama wanted, but at least I finally got the gold. After 4 minutes. That meant I only had 1 last recipe. 79 were completed. The mango pudding was the only thing standing between me and the first Cooking Mama 2 Dinner with Friends world record. I clicked it nervously, but I climbed my mountain. I trained with Mama, and I've come back a new chef. Peeling, slicing, blending, I was quicker than ever. There it was, the memorizing. I was doing well until...
No!
I restarted. I was sweaty and shaking. My brain was shutting down. My eyes had only been seeing Cooking Mama for the past 6 hours and 45 minutes. Every breath was Cooking Mama. Every neuron in my skull was Cooking Mama. Every atom in the universe at that moment was Cooking Mama. But my next attempt, oh my God, oh Jesus, is this the one? I nervously went through the rest of the recipe until I arrived at the last step. It's been about 3 hours and 15 minutes since I practiced removing the pudding from the mold, and to be honest, I don't remember the removal strats. First one, second one, let's go! I got all the puddings out flawlessly. I waited until the results to confirm it. Boom! 100 points on the mango pudding. Stop the timer. I did it. At long last, all 80 recipes in Cooking Mama 2 gold in 6 hours, 47 minutes, and 27 seconds. There might be some room for improvement there. Overall, I had a really fun time with the speedrun. It's not even close to a good run, and the time can easily be halved, but I still pride myself in knowing I was the first one to complete and document the Cooking Mama 2 all gold percent, and also burnt apple pie percent. If there's any speedrunners out there wanting to try and take my crown, I'll share some speed strats I thought of during the run. If you complete the steps too quickly, you get a bonus, and at the end of the recipe, if you get 5 bonuses, you receive a gift that you can't reject or skip, which loses a lot of time. You're smothering me, Mama. So if you can get no bonuses within the entire game, you'd be saving a lot of time. Another tip is, if you're gonna mess up the recipe, don't mess up the last step, because if you do, you have to wait through Mama giving you your score and clapping for you and being like, yeah, it's almost perfect. And the whole time you're like, yes, Mama, I know it's not perfect. I dropped an egg. And then she gives you like 3 presents in a row because you got too many bonuses. And you're just screeching at her to shut up the whole time. I didn't discover any glitches that would save time, unfortunately. I don't know what a Cooking Mama glitch would look like, but it doesn't sound pleasant. But it doesn't matter, because as of this moment right here, I'm the one with the Cooking Mama 2 Dinner with Friends world record. Guess I finally did something with my life after all. Anyway, thanks for watching my first attempt at a speedrun. I think, in hindsight, I should have chosen a game that could have been done in a few less hours, because I feel like I aged 20 years after this. But you live and learn.
I wanted to submit my run to speedrun.com, but since no one has run the game yet, I need to submit a request to add Cooking Mama 2 Dinner with Friends. But I only made my account last night, and to make a request, I need to have had my account for 7 days. So I'll submit it in 7 days. But it's not gonna be interesting, I didn't record my audio with it. It's just 6 hours of Cooking Mama gameplay. Also, we're working to drop some new merch in the shop really soon. I don't know if it's on the site yet, but it's coming, and we've got some real fun stuff in the works. All right, that's it. See you later.
Hey, guys. I know it's been a while since I've had a story to tell, but I have a story to tell. And it's because my birds accidentally laid eggs together without my consent. Okay, so let's back up. I'm sure the majority of you know this guy right here, Ari. Classic piece in the Jaden Animations lore. If you don't know him, you don't know me. I keep Ari in his own room because he destroys literally anything if he has access to it. In a way, you could call it a containment room. But when I'm not around to give him attention, I wanted to make sure he has a friend around and isn't just sitting there all alone and pitiful-like. So back in October 2019, I got Tofu, which, oh my god, I'm just realizing is much longer ago than I thought. Tofu, I thought you were still just a baby. She definitely isn't as well known as Ari, but we're talking about her now. I was so nervous back when Tofu first arrived because I obviously hadn't gotten any other pets before, and it was really important that she and Ari actually got along. Birds can be pretty particular, and some just flat out hate each other for no apparent reason. Some sort of bird drama or something, I don't know. I was worried my birds were gonna mean girls each other, and then suddenly I'd have 2 singular birds, which then doubles my original problem. I went through the typical process you're supposed to do to introduce them, keep them in separate areas for a bit, let them kinda see each other, slowly introduce them in small doses, and suddenly they were best friends. I was so happy. Plan B of having to get 4 birds was now not necessary. So great, everything was going according to plan. I have 2 birds that can keep each other company when I'm not around. Nothing could possibly go wrong when there's a pair of animals that get along very well. It was a peaceful, happy 3 years of 2 birds who were besties until this past spring where everything went wrong. How could this happen? I walked into the birds' room to give them their morning food, and on their dresser, I find 3 tiny little eggs. And by the way, when I say tiny, I mean you would be shocked to see how small bird eggs can be. These things were the size of a quarter. Some of you may be thinking, Jaden, why is this a bad thing? Jaden, it's the gift of life. This is a beautiful moment of miracles. Okay, sure, but actually, no. First of all, I don't want more birds. Especially fragile little fresh out the egg ones. Remember when I was worried I'd have to get 4 birds if Ari and Tofu didn't like each other? Why am I experiencing the same dilemma again? 2 birds is already enough. Especially since one of them has devoted his entire life to being a full-time bastard. Anyone who has a gremlin pet understands that that creature is equal to like 3 pets worth of energy. It's a lot to handle at all times, and if my plate gets any more full,
I'll unlock alcoholism. Second of all, this is now my problem that I need to handle ASAP. I can't be like, oh, I'm busy right now, I'll deal with it later. No, procrastinating would only lead to possible hatching. Not 100%, but there's a chance, I'll get to that later. Which leads back to my prior statement that I've stated multiple times at this point of I don't want more birds. Immediately, I was like, how did this happen? I've been preventing them from laying eggs together for so long. What changed? Unlike cats and dogs, birds can't really be neutered, at least not easily. You could give them like monthly hormone shots or there's other stuff, but it's just really complicated. And you're better off simply making sure their environment is set up in a way to discourage nesting and egg laying behavior. There's a few things you could do to prevent it, but to sum things up, basically, don't let the birds nest. If they find a dark little hidey hole, they'll start treating it like a nest and get hormonal, and suddenly you've got eggs. No nesting, for the most part, no problem. I looked around the room and was so confused. All they had in there were their cages, climbing tree, and a drawer I bought to hold all their bird stuff. And the eggs were just on the top of the drawer too, not even in a safe, burrowed, nest-like place. One had already rolled off the side and cracked open on the floor like an omelet. Tofu, this is not even close to motherly instincts. After a bit of snooping around, I pulled the drawer back from the wall to realize, oh my god, these birds have been secretly burrowing into the back of this drawer like they were plotting a prison escape. Somehow, Ari and Tofu squeezed their tiny bodies in between the drawer and the wall and started chewing the back of it to get into the drawers from behind. They literally gnawed through it like the nematodes in SpongeBob. You should have seen all the sawdust on the floor. Well, here's a picture, but it doesn't do it justice. It looked like a construction site and smelled like Home Depot. Suddenly, it made sense. They were using the drawer as a secret nest. Whenever I was in the room, they were out and about. Hi, Mom, please give us seeds. Nothing nefarious is going on. I leave, and boom, straight to the forbidden nesting drawer they go. Criminals. As I'm connecting the dots on how we got to this point, I realized I don't even know which one of these knuckleheads even laid the eggs. When I got Tofu, I made sure she was a girl. A little lady. I talked to one of my bird knowledgeable friends when I was considering getting another, and she recommended a female bird because there was a higher chance Ari would get along with her more than a male bird. So Tofu has been DNA checked and female certified. However, way back when I got Ari, I never got him slash her checked. Green cheek conure genders can only be confirmed through DNA tests, and there wasn't really any important reason to know Ari's gender at the time. So I just didn't. Over the years, I've just started calling him my big man because of the way he acted and behaviors he displayed felt very obnoxiously masculine. But it was always more of a gut feeling above anything else. But I am now facing a possible reality that my bird I've had for 7 years that I've been headcanoning is male, could have been female this whole time, and is the potential mother of these confusing eggs. Because, yes, birds don't need a male around to lay eggs. Think about it like chickens. They just be laying eggs out the wazoo without a rooster in sight. They don't care. Boom, egg. If it's a girl bird, that thing can lay eggs whether you or a male bird wants it to or not. So in this situation, Ari possibly being a girl is the thing that's blowing my mind the most. But one quick peek at their little bird booty hole swiftly gave me the answer. It was definitely Tofu. If you know, you know. I'm just saying, laying 3 eggs a quarter the size of your whole body biologically does something to you. Anyway, I immediately booked a vet visit for Tofu. Laying eggs drains birds of their calcium and overall health, so I wanted to make sure she was generally okay. The vet took a look at her and was like, she looks fine, she's acting fine, we'll give her some vitamins, but she's still got more eggs in her. What? Tofu, how many of those things you're gonna cook up? Also, we gotta limit this whole ordeal to as minimal as possible, please, cause that vet bill was not fun. We can't be making this a routine occurrence. It's no mystery, laying eggs can also be pretty dangerous for birds. There's a chance it could get stuck, and the bird just dies. And to be honest, I really didn't want that to happen. So every egg meant an extra mountain of stress and anxiety for me! Yippee! The vet told me conures typically lay eggs every other day, so once she goes a few days without laying any, then I can come back and get her another checkup to really make sure she's all good. So I let time pass, and in total, Tofu ended up laying 8 freaking eggs! She was not supposed to lay that many. Normally, conures lay clutches of like 4 or 5.
So she basically laid two birds worth of eggs. I don't know what to do. But all right, she's finally done. We can now move on to the second step in the what to do when your bird lays eggs without your permission plan. I have to swap out the eggs for fake ones. If I just yoink Tofu's eggs away, she's gonna be like, what the my eggs? Dude, what the hell? I just laid those. And she's biologically programmed to start laying more to replace them. Luckily, my friends Jordan and Kelsey had some fake Conure eggs because coincidentally, their bird laid eggs like 6 months prior to Tofu, so they already went through this process and were definitely supplying me with mental support. They lent me their fake eggs, I swapped them out, and perfect. Tofu is now trying to be a mother of 8 balls of plastic. After a few weeks of them not hatching, she'll move on, forget all about them, and everything will return to normal. It was a successful heist, as in I gave them both treats, stole all their eggs right in front of them, and they did not notice. You might be realizing, even though Tofu's eggs won't hatch, I still am in possession of actual real bird eggs that may or may not be fertilized. Yep, as much as Ari could have been the mother, he could also be the father. We don't know. Big drama. Are you the father? More like, is there even a father? After consulting with the vet and various bird resources, I basically had to make sure no birds could start growing in them just in case. Even though it's very likely they were just empty little chicken eggs, we couldn't run the risk. By the various resources aforementioned, I was given a few options. I was told I could smash them, which felt a tad bit too violent for me. Aw, Tofu, are these your little eggs? The first eggs you've ever laid in your life? Absolutely not. I could freeze them, just put them in a little container, pop them in the freezer, and there you go. But the last option, which sounded the most insane in my opinion, was to boil them. Make tiny little boiled eggs. Why does that one sound the most deranged and psychopathic? I know people consume all types of bird eggs all over the world, but boiling my own Conure's eggs just feels way past the line in mental sanity. So I popped them in the freezer to hang on to whatever humanity I had left after all this, and they've been there ever since. I still have them. I'll go to grab a popsicle and be like, oh, hello, tofu eggs. I don't know. Even though they won't hatch, they still feel special. They're my little baby tofu's little baby eggs. I don't want to just throw them away like they're nothing. I'll just keep them in my freezer forever because that's somehow the most sane option I was given. Some people might be like, Jaden, you should have tried to let them hatch. But you do not understand. I am absolutely, definitely not qualified to raise baby birds. I promise this was the best thing to do for everyone. For me, for the eggs, for Ari and Tofu. God knows Ari would have been an awful father. Or mother. So that's what I've been dealing with over the past few months. Tofu's fine now. She's essentially back to normal. I have since removed the secret nest drawer they have claimed. I'm sure they weren't too happy about that one, but hey, you reap what you sow. People will tell me, oh, you're the reason I want a bird. And I always think to myself, man, that's unfortunate. The majority of people are not suited to own a bird. Case one, they can cut through furniture like chainsaws. Case two, they could lay eggs and curse you to put them in the freezer like the egg murderer you are. Or worse. I love my birds with all my heart, but if anyone ever asks me if they make good pets, I turn into the biggest hater. And if you're a good bird owner, you'd probably agree with me. Birds are beautiful, intelligent, loyal companions. But they're also knife tornadoes who can force you to question your own mortality as you spend a fortune on vet bills.
Thanks for watching. Hey, by the way, do you want to see me in person in the flesh? James, Ross, Dom, Aaron, and I are all going back on tour again. Imagine going to a funny improv drawing comedy show, but there's no children. And I swear, live on stage, right in front of you. That's right, if you're 18 plus, you should grab tickets to our Scribble Showdown After Dark show. Check out scribbleshowdown.com to see if we're coming to a town near you. I hope to see you there, and also happy almost 2024. Time is but an illusion, and we're all aging too fast for our souls to truly absorb the meaning of life. I hope you enjoyed the little story about my birds. Bye-bye.
I just recently realized that the majority of my school days are over. I don't know about anyone else, but I used to think to myself, ugh, school's never gonna end. 12 years plus college is so long to spend just in school. And now, all of a sudden, it's practically over. And it's like, what happened? Wait, I'm not ready to be an adult yet. And you know what else is scary? I don't remember pretty much anything I learned from grade 6 up. It's just a jumble of English papers and random history I didn't care about. Kind of makes you question the education system when you think about it. So I don't remember a lot of the things I studied during school, but I do have a lot of dumb, random memories that I, for some reason, haven't forgotten about over the years. For example, in first grade, I lost my front left tooth in the middle of class and started bleeding all over the place. And the teacher had to stop in the middle of class to get me a tissue and one of those little teeth envelopes to hold the tooth I just spat out. I don't know if schools still use those, but they were the funniest concept to me. Like, you come home, oh mom, you got mail. Oh, what is it? Oh, it's not much, it's just my freaking gross saliva-covered baby tooth I ripped out of my head in the middle of school. Does school still do this? I don't know. I hope so. Oh, Jayden, that's a funny memory. I bet you don't remember what you were learning about while you bled on everything. Nope, you're wrong. We were learning about emperor penguins. Thanks for remembering all those important details, brain. Appreciate ya. I also remember everyone in school kind of fit into a category. Athletes, popular kids, nerds, anime nerds, emos, you name them. What kind of kid was I in school? You guessed it! The quiet one who never talked at all. Growing up, I was a shy, quiet person, and I always only had one or two friends in a class, if any. I mean, I'm still pretty reserved, but I mean, that's not the point. I was so shy that one time my nose started bleeding randomly in the middle of a class, and I was too quiet to get up and excuse myself to go to the bathroom or the nurse. So I silently just raised my hand, waiting to get permission to leave. And you know what happened? The teacher took 5 minutes to call on me. I spent 5 minutes panicking, trying my best not to bleed on anything. Looking back, there was a lot of blood involved in these memories. Ooh, one time a teacher asked the class a question, and a few people raised their hand, but as he was looking around the room, we made eye contact. Oh god. Jayden! Crap. Everyone knows, if you don't want to be called on, don't make eye contact. It's school 101. I don't know. He went on to someone else who had their hand raised, which he should have done in the first place. If someone doesn't have their hand raised, it means they don't have the answer. Don't be mad when you call on someone without their hand raised and they don't have an answer. So he continued his lecture, and I started calming down from the surprise spotlight. But a few minutes later, he had another question. Can anyone define a peninsula? Oh, I know what a peninsula is, but I don't know how to describe it, so I won't raise my hand. Jayden! Are you actually trying to give me a seizure? I don't... Do you know? No, but... No, well, I mean, yes, I know what it is. Then he yelled, "Then tell me!" The class laughed because he was being sarcastic. I thought it was funny too, but for some reason I almost started crying. He didn't call on me the rest of the year. Alongside being the shy girl, I was also known as being the art kid. I think everyone who's artsy in school can relate. Whenever someone found out you liked to draw, it would immediately turn to, "You like to draw? Can you draw me?" And the answer would always be, anyway, like the nice way of saying, haha, that's a silly question. No, of course I don't want to draw you. And several years later, to this day, people are still asking me if I would draw them things. And the answer is still, haha. No. In my middle school art class, on the last day of school, we had a little celebration end of the year art competition. Not a drawing contest, but a who's the most passionate about art and is most likely going to do something with it in their life and not just drop it and get a day job sitting in a cubicle all day. Contest. Me, having pretty much zero self-confidence, already accepted the fact that someone else would get it. I wasn't sad or anything. I just knew in my head people weren't going to vote for me because, one, I never really talked to people, and it was a class vote, and two, I don't know, I just didn't think I was good enough. But to my surprise, I actually won! I was so startled when the teacher called my name, like, what? Me? Are you sure? You don't want to count the votes again? Kathy's pretty good. Everyone likes Kathy. Frickin' Kathy. Then high school happened, and I met my high school art teacher. This guy was... I don't know how to describe him. I've never met someone so... psychopathic. To start, he had this obsession with Pirates of the Caribbean, and even though there's nothing wrong with that, I mean, everyone has their fandoms, he would sit back at his desk and blast different remixes of the Pirates of the Caribbean soundtrack, even when we were all trying to draw. He would hop up onto desks and scream, "Swing your sword!" while whirling around a golf club with a paintbrush taped to the end of it. No one knew what he meant. We didn't question anything. He hung a pirate flag on the emergency fire sprinkler. A bit of a safety hazard if you ask me, but again, no one questioned him. And one time on a random day of class, "Arr, draw me!" He burst through the door dressed up completely like a pirate, screaming in people's faces and running around like a crackpot. I didn't take his class anymore. But that was not the end of Mr. Captain Jack Sparrow, nope. You know why? Because he was one of the tennis coaches, yep. And you all know who was on the tennis team. It wasn't that bad because he coached the boys' team. His ex-wife coached the girls. She got fired later on for sleeping with the track teacher. But this story isn't about her. So he'd be there while we were on the next court with our own drills. And one practice, I don't know what happened, but all of a sudden he got super hyped out of nowhere and started yelling and making a commotion. And we all kind of just stopped and looked over at him like, okay, what's he doing? And then he started yelling, I'm gonna jump over the net! And the rule of tennis for everyone out there is, don't jump over the net. We were all just standing there like, what the heck is going on? And then he started running to actually do it. And you know what happened? He safely jumped over the net. Wrong. His foot caught the top of it, and it slingshotted him face first into the concrete. This is why you don't jump over the net. You need to take him to the doctor. And she's like, nah, he's fine. Like, no, seriously, he could have a concussion. That was a hard hit. He's all right. He'll shake it off. Dude, so his ex-wife took him to the doctor, and we all just stood around for a while. I don't think he had a concussion, but he did get two black eyes and had to wear sunglasses in class for like a month. And that was cool for me. There you go. Hey dudes, it's been a while since I've talked to you. Sorry I took so long getting this video out. I'm gonna start uploading more frequently now, so yeah. I wanted to let you know real quick before the recording bloopers, there's new t-shirt designs in the shop now, so you might want to check those bad boys out. Yeah. I always record in my closet, and Ari's in here with me. You got anything to say, Ari? Quack? Okay, so yeah, see you later, alligator. Quiet person. And I always only had one, and I was so shy that, oh, my neck popped. Which he should have done in the first, Ari. Which he should have done in the, god dang it. I think that actually helped me continue doing art, actually. Wait. Quack, quack.
Ah, dating. Not a fan. But you know, dating simulators can be the closest thing there is to dating without actually having to go out and do it for real, which can seem much more appealing to people like me who do not like people. Believe it or not, dating sims are more popular than you think. Don't believe me? Yeah, I guess that's fair. Either way, there's a seemingly endless plethora of different types of dating simulators out there. You can simulate dating anime girls, anime boys, evil anime girls, old rich chicken man, bubbles, birds. Anything you set your mind to, you can date. Virtually. I've never really played or wanted to play dating simulators. The closest thing I've come to developing any sort of connection with virtual beings is being best friends with Chief in Animal Crossing when I was 13, so I decided I want to see what they're like. You know, surely there's a reason the genre has roughly 22 million consumers. I mean, that's a few million short of the entire continent of Australia. You love bugs, but I didn't go out looking to play the generic normal games. I wanted to test the limits of game developers' creativity and find dating sims that were conceptually really out there. First on the table is speed dating for ghosts. As you can guess, we are starting out by dating ghosts. So how it works is you choose a room to go into, you have a few minutes to chat with a ghost until a bell rings, and another one sits down in front of you. There's three ghosts per room, and once you get the chance to chat with all of them, they all do another circuit, you can continue your conversations, and ultimately choose which one you want to go on a date with. I'm greeted by the speed dating receptionist, Fran, who says, "We get all kinds of ghosts here. Nice ones, sad ones, spooky ones. It gets lonely being a ghost." And I say, "I like being alone." And Fran goes, "I've never met a ghost who doesn't need anyone. No one to talk to. It makes sense, all of this. I'm doing just fine, thanks. You don't even want to make a friend?" Nope. And that led to me leaving the speed dating for ghosts event. Well, okay, I guess I can't be myself in these games after all. So I lie, and I'm given the choice to enter one of three rooms. The Room of Palms, the Room of Liars, and the Room of Black. I just went into the Room of Palms. This huge buff jock ghost sits down in front of me, introduces himself as Riley, and proceeds to call me pretty hot for a ghost, to which I reply, slow down there, buddy. And Riley immediately apologizes, and now I feel bad. Guys, I don't think I'm good at... I think I've been choosing nothing but all the wrong answers so far. Riley and I chat a bit, the bell rings, and I meet this old smoking ghost who used to live in Vegas and was part of the Vegas Mafia until they burned her house down with her in it. The bell rings again, and this giant bush ghost sits down. So this is Steph. She's anxious and introspective in a light and charming way. I'll be honest when I say I did really enjoy her conversations, but then you start to realize she doesn't realize she's dead and a ghost. And then the conversation turns more into just trying to hint towards letting her know she's not alive anymore. I started learning Japanese, but there's thousands of kanji characters to learn. You've got an eternity to learn. If only, I'll die before I learn the language. You're already dead. Ha! Yeah, you're right. In a way, we all are just waiting to die. You're dead. You threatening me? I'm gonna tell Fran. Steph finally catches on, and then it gets super introspective. You know, I still feel alive. Just dissociated. Ouch! Oof! Whoa! Oh, that one was real out of nowhere. What the heck? You can't recite my own feelings to me like that. Time ran out and the event came to a close. Out of all the ghosts, I wasn't really drawn to any of them enough to want to go on a date. I like Steph, but she's got her own demons to face for a bit. So back to the three rooms I went. For round two, I chose... Room of Liars. First up is a ghost that is apparently very scared of ghosts. When I was alive, I used to be so scared of ghosts. And turns out they were real this whole time? That one was, you know, I feel like there was an overall ceiling going into it with how well that could have gone no matter what. So, you know. Then came Spooky Peter, and I was ecstatic. Oh my god, he's so cool! He died from the bubonic plague, and now he's become a master at spooking people who are still alive. He's an actual legend. I'm blessed to be in his presence. The living people have written books about him. I was getting spooking tips and learning about the mirror world when the bell rang and this shark ghost, Leon, sits down in front of me and leads with, "Wanna make some money?" "Doesn't everyone?" "Exactly. Let's rob a bank." So I meet up with Leon at the place he told me. I was a little bummed I couldn't chat more with Spooky Peter, but when someone invites you to join them in robbing a bank, how can you say no? You put everything on hold. We were getting ready to go in and we're chatting with Leon's bank robbing buddy, Carlsbad, who is explaining how he works at the bank we were about to rob so he can open the safe and knows where all the security cameras are pointed. When... Spooky Peter! Leon recruited Spooky Peter to join the bank rob crew from the speed dating event as well. I'm nothing less than ecstatic, and my mental health is at an all-time high, which is the ideal circumstances for bank robbing. We get into the safe thanks to Carlsbad, and unfortunately, there wasn't a huge pile of money like Leon was hoping. Like in the, you know, like in the cartoons and movies. But we were able to open a deposit box that had some lawyer documents in it and a 14-karat gold vanity mirror set. I gave the mirror to Spooky Peter. That was about all the time we had before we had to scram out of there. And even though it wasn't a huge pile of money, I think it was a pretty successful bank robbery. We took something from the bank. That's, what else do you want? And I got to see Spooky Peter again. So, since I technically didn't go out on a date with anyone from the liar's room and robbed a bank instead, that leaves one room left to find my spooky ghost partner. Everyone in the Room of Black was very nice. There was a punk rock skater kid just looking to have fun with a new friend, a nice old pollen lady who makes jam for the living, and Gary.
Hello? I'm gonna narrow my own eyes at you. Oh my god. Okay. Hello? No. Bed breath? Please. I'm so sorry. Oh my god, this is embarrassing.
I learned Gary's a vengeful ghost who was murdered at his office job, but doesn't remember how, why, or who did it. So naturally, I go along with him to find his murderer and avenge his soul. Turns out Gary was the murderee and stabbed his work partner and then was shot by the police. Hmm. Well, he was very nice to me. Speed dating for ghosts. I made a lot of friends, but no virtual ghost could win my heart. So let's move on to the Ratchler. You know how the Bachelor works. This is just that. In rat form. I've been told these violet eyes of mine are more purple than all the lavender in the world, and I certainly smell better too. Ooh, you talk a lot. Dear, I can't say that I recall you mentioning it, but how'd you say you scored on the SATs? I got a 1570, which is quite good, if you didn't know.
Wow, you're so different. You wanted to hear more about my work?
Yes, sometimes I host Saturday Night Live and also Wheel of Fortune and Dancing with the Stars. Ever seen Avengers by Marvel? I was the Avenger.
Wow.
Meep. Meeple.
Wow, you're so different. It's time you meet my children, Reggie997, Evangeline, Esquire Jr., Sharpie, and Trashcan. They already love you.
Yuck. If you want my respect, you need to earn it. My whole life, I've had to make do by myself and work for what I've got. And every time I've needed help, people let me down. Yuck.
Honestly, as much as I enjoy being here on the Ratchler, I can't wait to get back home so I can keep teaching my baking class at the local youth center. The kids are so sweet. Next up, I'm teaching them all to bake cheesecake. I hope you can come with me. I could bake you a cheesecake. The kids would love you.
You talk a lot. I ended up proposing to three salamanders dressed up as a rat. All right, what's next? Dating a dog? Sure, why not at this point? Would you like to see my collection of newts? No. What's your ideal starting Pokemon? I'm way more Digimon, to be honest. Would you like to hear a joke? I hate jokes. Pipe down and listen up. What do you call an alligator in a vest? An investigator. I never want to see you again. So I've tried dating ghosts, rats, dogs. What else is there at this point? You're right. Namco video game characters. When I found out this sim lets you date Namco characters, I immediately thought of Figar from Dig Dug. I just think he's really cool. I don't think they'd put Figar in there, but Dig Dug is part of the cast, so I started getting my hopes up that I could get to know Dig Dug. So in the game, you play as a shy, awkward cousin from Katamari Damacy who attends Namco High. You end up being put in detention for rolling up desks, the entire marching band, cars, Principal Dig Dug. Wait, he's the principal? Yeah, that's not gonna work. So now I'm bummed and on the verge of quitting the game. What's the point in playing if neither Dig Dug or Figar are romantic interests? But in the cast of characters in the detention room I could talk to, one stuck out to me. Galaga Ship. And suddenly it's all worth it again. I go up and try to talk to Galaga Ship, and naturally they're surrounded by all the popular characters. They're talking about the school play and how they all think Galaga Ship is perfect to play Juliet. And thus began my plan to get into the school play to Romeo Juliet kiss Galaga Ship. I have the option to talk to other characters and I just go, no, I'd rather sit here and do nothing until the end of detention. And that's exactly what I did. The next day was the little school festival to show off all the clubs and stuff. Naturally, I went straight for the drama club and found Galaga Ship manning the booth. I want to join. Auditions are in the auditorium. I want to be Romeo. Read your lines. Alas, that love. Whose view? Romeo's understudy. Bam! Good enough. Now I have an excuse to practice lines with Galaga Ship, who did land the Juliet role because they're perfect in every way. The story moves along and I meet up with Galaga Ship to rehearse our lines. Well, their lines. You know, understudy. But Principal Dig Dug finds us in the auditorium and thinks we're skipping class for some reason and gives us both double detention.
So the obvious next step for me was to sneak onto Galaga ship's property at night and discreetly start apologizing for getting them into double detention. But then their parents find us being secretive and suspicious and ban me from ever talking to their child ever again. It starts raining. Then Pac-Man, who has not been a character in this story at all up until this point, shows up and tells me to be true to myself. Okay, I go home. The next day at school, we find out suddenly Pac-Man has been kidnapped by evil Namco High. I don't even know where the story is going anymore. Galaga ship and I team up and beat everyone up, I think. Like all the students and teachers. We rescue Pac-Man, and that's the end. The end. I'll be honest, that one was a bit... I think it lost me there. You'd think a game where you can date Galaga ship would have a clearer story. After all the dating simulators I just went through, I think I feel weird. Were they all fun? Yeah, I'd say so. But yeah, maybe going for the strangest ones. I guess I got what I asked for. Either way, it was a nice... experience. I believe I understand the appeal of dating simulators. It is unfortunate I didn't end up finding my perfect virtual relationship, but hey, there's plenty of ones and zeros in the sea. But I do not think I will be casting my line again anytime soon. However, I could go for another bank robbery.
Surprise! We've been working with Terraria to do a collab on some merch stuff, and it's here! Look at this awesome Jaden Lunata cultist stuff! Dang, dude, it's so sick! You can find it on the Terraria shop, which is just terraria.shop. We're working on some Christmas merch for my own store, so keep an eye out for that. And if this video goes up on the day it should be, which is November 14th, I'm on tour! Scribble Showdown is on the road, and the gang and I should be having a great time making people laugh with our silly little drawings. Alright, see you later. Also, dating games, am I right? Hey, just wanted to mention you can buy our new Jaden anime figure bundle on jadenanimations.com. Cool, thank you.
Game shows. People's favorite way to fantasize about how to win a lot of money and look really cool in front of the entire country. Everyone has sat down in front of a good old Deal or No Deal and watched the middle-aged white people pick the obvious wrong cases while Howie Mandel just smiles. And if you were on that show, you could do so much better because lucky case number 24 has never let you down. Well, today I'm gonna live that fantasy and prove how easy it is to actually win money on game shows. With my friends Jordan and Kelsey, we're gonna simulate three of America's favorite game shows and see how much money we can collectively win. Let's see how hypothetically rich we could have gotten. The first game we tried was Family Feud. 90% of you guys know Family Feud, and I see you, but for the ones who don't, the show asks 100 random people survey questions, and you have to guess what their most common answers are to get points. I thought this was gonna be easy. Steve Harvey sets you up with a dirty question, you scream naked grandma, and then they give you money. But the moment this poser of a host walked out, I knew I was out of my element.
Oh no! Ari Tofu's family?
Up against the Ari Tofu's. Let's play family.
That's not Steve Harvey.
The game lets you build your family, and I was just gonna make me and my two birds, Ari and Tofu, and randomize the last two members. Looking back, I probably should have just made Jordan and Kelsey because they were right there. But somehow the game randomized to Walter White, so we just kind of went with it.
You can see them, like, the stretching.
Walter White!
That's Whoa. Walter White! It's really him!
That's good.
Look,
that's
so good.
The prompt we were given first was, name a president whose face appears on money, to which we buzzed in Lincoln, and the opposing family, the Hortons, answered Roosevelt. And America must have been thinking the same thing I was, which was, wait, Roosevelt is on money? Because we got the higher score and got to keep guessing more answers. We very confidently punched in Washington, which was first, and then realized we didn't have any more guesses. Obama? After three strikes of wrong answers, the Hortons buzzed Hamilton, which is stupid because Alexander Hamilton wasn't even a president to begin with. Everyone who experienced 2015 knows that.
Does that mean they steal all the points?
No. Hamilton?
Well, like the Alexander.
It's time for you to score some points.
If I know something, Hamilton is not a president.
Like the Graham Bell? Alexander Graham Bell?
They took all the points! BS! Name a president. Alexander Hamilton. Ding, 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 ding. Here's all the points. America is so dense and uneducated, they are literally pumping wrong answers into Family Feud, and I am suffering because of it. Name a fruit. Hot dog. Going into round two, we were down just a bit at 0 points to 96, but we swept the next prompt. Something that helps a baby go to sleep. Milk. Round three, hit the fan again. Something you might lose as you get older. We were on a roll with hair, teeth, memory, hearing, and memory. We got a strike because I said parents, and even though that's literally 100% correct, guaranteed, it wasn't on there. There was one answer left we needed to figure out, and we came up with vision, which we were very confident in, but received another strike. Flabbergasted. I was hearing on there, but not vision. We threw out a half-assed walking, got our last strike, and it was given to the Hortons. Strangely enough, they ended up passing. Guess they couldn't think of anything. But you know what the answer was revealed to be? Eyesight. America is so lucky the Hortons passed on answering, because if they answered eyesight and took all our points again after we said vision, it would have started my villain arc. With a strong point lead of 224 to 96, we are now entering a double points round. What's something people alphabetize? Names. Soup. Four Americans thought they were being funny in the Family Feud surveys, and I am yet again suffering because of it. So the Hortons can play, but they end up passing again for some reason. That family only alphabetizes soup. We tried music, children, we ran out of ideas and just said soup again. Nothing was right. The answers ended up being address book, files, recipes, lists, and spices. Which spices, I beg to differ. There's no way the typical American has curry powder and garam masala in the front. They have salt, pepper, and garlic powder, and everything gets shoved in the back until they die. So now we were on the last round, which was fast money. They give you one last prompt with one answer, and if you guess it, you get the chance to actually win money. Name something that runs on gasoline besides a car. I buzz in with a strong bus, which was incorrect. I'm not wrong, though. I see you going to the comments. Google says a bus is a separate vehicle from trucks, cars, vans, lorries, etc. It is not any of them. That's what Google says. Lawnmower. All we proved was America is bogging down Family Feud with their stupid wrong answers. I don't want to win that dumb freedom money anyway. With $0 in our pocket, we moved on to The Price is Right. I've actually never watched this game show before, so I was learning as we went. Four lucky contestants from the audience are given a random item, and the closest one to guess the actual price of it, without going over, is selected to come up on stage and play more games to earn money. And I learned that even if I was one of the lucky four people selected, I wouldn't even get the chance to be on the actual show. The game gave me 6 chances to be the closest one to the price of the items, and I lost every single one. But hypothetically, even if I miraculously was the winner and taken on stage, I still would have won nothing. I tried twice for content and still ended up with $0. So we're entering our last game show of the day, and we've got a whopping $0 to our name after being on 2 of the most popular shows created. We really need to make this one count, because I am going to look like such an idiot if I was on 3 game shows and came back with zero money. We walk out on stage. The spotlight finds us. Jeff Foxworthy raises the microphone to his mouth and welcomes us to Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader? The show where you're given trivia children up to grade 5 are taught. Answer them all correctly and we could be leaving the show with $1 million in our pockets. But fail and you're doomed to know you're not smarter than a literal child who has to raise their hand to go to the bathroom. That's Jeff's favorite line to drop when people lose. He says it all the time, it's like his go-to roast. Every couple of questions you have to pick a child they have provided.
to help you out. You're given the chance to either peek at their answer or copy their answer, but you can only do those once. They're like your child lifelines. I picked Jeremy as our first little buddy. I liked his enthusiasm, and he gave us a really good high five. The subject we chose was under fourth grade math, and the question was, how many lines of symmetry are found on the following shape? It showed us a picture of a pentagon. I accidentally thought it was a hexagon at first, which was not my finest moment. And then it glitched and never went away. We couldn't get the pentagon to disappear and literally couldn't read the multiple choice answers. Our thoughts were, since we wanted to punch in the answer of one, yes, I know, another not the finest moment. Look, I was stressed, okay? The pentagon was freaking me out. I wanted to say one. Surely they would have put the answers in ascending order, A being the smallest number and D being the highest. So we locked in A, hoping it was one.
Lock in.
Oh, man.
Locking in.
So, no! No, let's restart. Let's restart.
First of all, 7 was completely the opposite of what we were trying to say. Second of all, we wouldn't have been right in the first place. And third of all, Jeremy ended up saving our hides. So besides being able to either peek at or copy your student's answer, if you ever get something wrong but the kid gets it right, you get to be saved and are still in the game. Like the rest of the lifelines, it can only be applied once, and Jeremy was here to be our Pentagon-knowing hero. Anyway, we restarted. That attempt, we weren't counting that one because that was just a practice round, and the forever-lasting Pentagon wasn't fair. It messed with our heads. But this one's for real now. Attempt 2 started and was going well. We ended up getting to the 6th question without any problems. But of course, as our luck would have it, we were given another glitch question where they gave us an image, and then we can't read the answers. This time the question was from 4th grade social studies. What is the shape of the following landmark? And then it showed us this. I didn't know what it was called, but Kelsey was sure it was the obelisk, and we could barely see that as answer C. Even though we were 99% sure we should just lock in C, I wanted to play it safe and copy our chosen student Alicia's answer. So we copied her, and Jeff Foxworthy revealed the correct answer, which was C, obelisk. Jordan, Kelsey, and I all celebrated because we were right, but in a very unfortunate turn of events, it was revealed that Alicia punched her answer in as B, pyramid. What, you little, oh my god. Attempt 3. We really wanted to do one attempt each with the game shows because on national TV you've only got one shot to make your money, but I don't think there's ever been times on Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader where Jeff Foxworthy tapes the obelisk to your face and makes you guess on while you're locking in. This time, I'll say it now, we didn't get any questions where the pictures perpetually blocked the answers. It was all a fair fight, and whatever we win on this try is what we're going with. And it was going well. Really well, in fact. Third grade animal science. Which of the following animals has 8 arms? Ha! Octopus. I knew that one. Third grade music. A symbol that represents the duration and pitch is also known as what? Musical note. Then we got stuck on fifth grade measurements. 9 meters is how many yards? I don't know that. I am an unfortunate slave to the imperial system. So we decided to copy Juliet's answer, which was 9.8. She was right. We got to move on, even passing the $25,000 benchmark question. That means if we end up flunking out from this point on, we still get to leave with 25K. Solid, but we're going for that million. By the way, I had no idea you could win that much money on this show. They could ask you, what's this? And then you say the color wheel, and then you can walk out with $300,000. That's absolutely bonkers. Anyway, we were getting far. Really far. 50,000, 100,000, 175,000, 300,000. We were still in it. The $500,000 question arrived. Fourth grade inventors. Which inventor's improvements to the steam engine were instrumental in starting the Industrial Revolution? We didn't know. None of the choices seemed right, as in, we didn't know who any of them were besides Benjamin Franklin, and I don't think he did that. After a lot of back and forth, we decided to guess on Robert Fulton, which was the wrong answer. We were out. But then we realized we still had hope. We hadn't been saved yet. If the student we chose during this round got it right, we can still keep going. Jordan, Kelsey, and I looked to our side to realize Alicia. The girl who thought this was a pyramid.